My name is Chad Herring, and my title is South Coast Fishery Policy Lead with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The date is June 26, 2019, and the time is 11 a.m. We are here at the Region 6 Montesano office for a public hearing on the regulation proposals for the coastal freshwater exceptions to statewide rules that were filed in CR 102 WSR 19-11-130. Please be sure you have signed the sign-in sheet and indicate on it whether you would like to testify. We will take your testimony in the order that you signed in. We will limit each person's comment period to 3 minutes. Considerable public discussion on the proposed fishing season has occurred during meetings that are part of the North of Falcon process. After the approval from the director, the final regulations will be published on the Washington State Register. So a new thing that we've added to these public hearings for this year is a small 20-minute presentation to kind of summarize everything that went into the rulemaking process for this year. So I'll do that now, and then we'll move right into public testimony. So this is the Administrative Procedures Act flowchart. Some of you have attended our meetings in the past, might have seen this graphic before. Basically, the Administrative Procedures Act is something that's happening in the background of our North of Falcon process, all the way around it. It's basically our legal framework for instituting rules and regulations. So the steps that we have to go through legally to change rules and regulations around our fisheries. It consists of four main parts. A CR 101, that is an official document that goes out, and it's basically the notice that, hey, we're thinking about making some rules and regulations around this topic. You may want to stay tuned, right? It's our information that goes out to the public and lets them know that we're thinking about making a change. Then we have the CR 102. The CR 102 is our proposed regulations and rules for that issue. Then you have a 35-day public comment period where we take written comments, and we also have a public hearing here at the end. This is part of that for this rulemaking process. And then the last part of that is the filing of the 103 and concise explanatory statement, which are our final rules and regulations. So, where does North of Falcon happen within this process? So, within this process, in between the filing of the 101, hey, we're thinking about making some rules, and our 102, our proposal of what those rules may be for the year, this is where that North of Falcon process occurs, in between steps, the 101 filing and the filing of the 102. Okay? So, some more specific information about those filings. In terms of the 101 for recreational fisheries, the CR 101 was filed on January 22nd, 2019, noticed in the Washington State Register as 19-03-137. The CR 102, our proposed rules and regulations for recreational fisheries, were filed on May 22nd, Washington State Register number 19-11-130. Written comments were due to the rules coordinator by June 24th of 2019. And the final piece of that public comments part is the public hearings. The Puget Sound Marine and Freshwater hearings were yesterday in Olympia at 9 a.m. Columbia River hearings were yesterday down in Ridgefield at the Region 5 office. Yesterday at 1 p.m. we had the Coastal Marine public hearing here this morning at 9, and now we are at this step, the Coastal Freshwater hearing today in Montesano, 11 a.m. For commercial fisheries, Puget Sound Commercial 101 was filed on the 22nd with that Washington State Register number. The 102 for Puget Sound Commercial Fisheries was filed on the 22nd. There's the WSR number there for that. Written comments were due by the 24th. We talked about they had a public hearing yesterday in Olympia for that. For the coastal commercial seasons, Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor, they are two separate rulemaking processes, but were filed, both filed on the same day, January 4th. There's the WSR reference number, 1903-028. For the 102s, those were both filed for Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor on May 16th. WSR number 19-11-075 for Willapa Bay and 076 for Grays Harbor. Written comments were due yesterday to the rules coordinator by the end of COB yesterday. And we mentioned that those hearings took place yesterday in this office at 9 and 10:45. So, another part of the APA is the Regulatory Fairness Act. Basically what this is it says if we think we're making some rules and regulations that are going to affect small businesses, we have to do an SBEIS, which is a Small Business Economic Impact Statement, to kind of justify the changes to that and what it might mean to people. So, legal disclaimer, I've got to read here, so bear with me. The recreational CR 102 provided notice that this rules package is exempt under the provisions of RCW 19.85.025 section 3 and RCW 34.05.310 section 4 subsection D, which covers rule clarifications that do not change effect. This was an incorrect reference for exemption. The purpose of the SBEIS is to identify and possibly mitigate for regulatory compliance costs that a rule may impose on small business. Okay? The recreational rules package does not impose regulatory compliance costs on small businesses and is thus exempt from the SBEIS requirement pursuant to RCW 19.85.025 section 4. So, basically when we filed the 102, said we were exempt because of this reason and this reason. That was an error. We're correcting that now in public hearing. That's why I'm reading this off to you. It should only have been just this one exemption, not this other one. So just clearing that up as we move through. And SBEIS is not provided with respect to changes in available harvest of fish for conservation or allocation purposes, as those factors are not viewed as regulatory imposition of a compliance cost. So when we do the small, we're not doing any questions today,
I'm not
Joe.
Doing
sorry.
Questions. Oh, okay. I'm brain damaged, so I need to know the EIS part. What it stands for? Small business exemption.
Economic impact statement.
Economic. Okay.
Yeah. So changes in harvest levels, we don't have to do an SBEIS because that's not part of the regulatory imposition. Regulatory imposition would apply to like changes in gear type, stuff like that. So, I'm going to flip through here. Okay. Our salmon don't honor political boundaries during their migration. So salmon planting must happen in a number of jurisdictional levels, okay? So internationally, out here, salmon are managed by the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Okay, that's what happens out here. Once we move into the economic exclusion zone, those fisheries are managed by the Pacific Fishery Management Council. Why this is important, and specifically for Pacific Salmon Treaty, is the Salmon Treaty sets limits on catch and interceptions of salmon from Southeast Alaska all the way through the southern U.S. As quotas are set for those fisheries each year, those catches must be factored in as they affect the numbers of fish returning for Washington, right? How hard they fish out here determines how much or little we get back, right? So all those factors have to be considered as we move through the North of Falcon process. So fisheries in international waters governed by the Pacific Fish Salmon Treaty, economic exclusion zone, 3 miles to 200 miles offshore, managed in the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and then fisheries in the terminal areas are managed by the states, but they must be consistent with federal court orders. Most specifically for us is U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon. Okay? So, a little bit more information about the North of Falcon process. The North of Falcon process is really a year-round process where we have kind of 7 weeks in that March and April time frame where it's really intensive with meetings and pre-season planning, okay? We have to do this, this North of Falcon process for all five species, and it encompasses negotiations with 25 sovereign entities in the form of our tribal co-managers across the state, okay? The annual cycle for North of Falcon begins with data compilation and pre-season forecast development each winter. Then we move into the pre-season planning of fisheries through the North of Falcon process, that March and April timeframe we talked about. And then after that, we move into implementation and monitoring of those fisheries, Then once those fisheries have been prosecuted, it's all about data collection from the fisheries and annual stock assessment activities, and that just feeds the cycle again. Once we get through run reconstructions and everything for the previous year, now we move right into developing forecasts and start that North of Falcon process all over again. So fisheries developed within the North of Falcon process must be consistent with the Pacific Salmon Treaty, with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, with some of those federal court decisions we talked about earlier in U.S. v. Washington, U.S. v. Oregon, Endangered Species Act requirements, as well as Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission policies. For example, North of Falcon policy, Fish and Hatchery Reform policy, Grace Harbor, Willapa Bay, and Columbia River salmon management policies as well. Also, we have to consider applicable state law when we're doing that. So, this is our public meeting schedule from this year's North of Falcon. We started there at the end of February with our preseason salmon forecast and fishing opportunities meetings. Our first Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting happened March 7th through the 12th. That one was in Vancouver this year. All those meetings, since it encompasses the Pacific Fishery Management Council, encompasses all five states. So those meetings rotate around. Every year they're in a different location. And those are planned way ahead of time. This year, the very first Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting was in Vancouver. At that meeting, we developed the three ocean options for consideration for that year. Then we move into some fisheries discussion, our first public meeting for North of Falcon, Puget Sound recreational discussion. On March 25th, I talked about here how we developed the three ocean options were developed. March 25th out in Westport was the public hearing where they were taking public comment on those three ocean options for under consideration for this year. March 26th, March 27th, a bunch of regional discussions in those locations. 28th at Snake River. April 2nd, we had a Columbia River and Ocean Fisheries discussion down in Ridgefield. April 3rd, up in Linwood, was our second North of Falcon public meeting. A lot of these meetings had audio or video taken, so those are available on the website. And then April 11th through the 15th was our final Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. That was where the ocean option was set for 2019 season. That took place in California this year. 2019 North of Falcon State Tribal Meeting Schedule. So this is the schedule of meetings we had with our tribal co-managers. February 26th, that kicked off in the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission building in Lacey. We had a co-manager technical modeling meeting, just technical staff, talking about modeling for that year. February 28th, we had a co-manager policy meeting at the Muckleshoot Casino. We met with our tribal co-managers around development of those ocean options and our recommendations into them. Down in Vancouver at the first PFMC council meeting there at the beginning of March. We had a North of Falcon state tribal meeting at the Lacey Community Center on March 20th. March 21st had a follow-up to that. This meeting was specifically about South Puget Sound chum management. That happened at the Nisqually Tribal Office. April 2nd, we met with the tribes up in Linwood. And then we met with them again April 4th up in Linwood. And then we had some meetings down with our tribal co-managers April 11th through the 15th down at the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. And that was once again where the final ocean option was decided on. So a variety of different ways to get in your comment. Public comment was taken throughout the web, throughout the process via the web portal email interface. So here's a screenshot of our website. You got to kind of scroll down to see our areas, but for the coastal freshwater, they had a forecast summary, proposed seasons, and submit a comment links right there. So that was a way that you could get your comments in or just send them into the rules coordinator. Okay. So going into the 2019 season, there's always a few challenges to preseason planning in terms of harvest opportunity for the year. One of those is always balancing our harvest opportunity with our conservation and Endangered Species Act limits. Secondary to that is once we've decided on the available amount of harvest opportunity, allocating those harvest and or impacts between all the fishery sectors, right? That's always a challenge. And a new one for us this year was the potential effects of fisheries on southern resident killer whales. And really the main focus of that was looking at prey availability effects. We do, some of these killer whales do feed in the summer months and early fall months off the coast, Columbia River Plume, Willapa Bay, off Grays Harbor. So we had to consider, in our fishery package, consider the potential effects on southern resident killer whales. So for freshwater season development, we'll start with Willapa Bay. We got some guidance from our commission for 2019 fisheries planning within Willapa Bay. We received that guidance on April 6th of 2019. It was to actively manage to not exceed 20% total impacts for natural origin Chinook on the Willapa and Nacelle rivers. Actively manage to not exceed 10% total impacts for chum. Notice that's a little different. Chinook is natural origin. Chum is just fish, right? Just 10% impact total to the chum run. It also suspended fishery management principle number 6 of the fall Chinook salmon species specific guidance in the Willapa Bay policy. That was around dates and times when the commercial fishery can be prosecuted. So that was suspended for this year. And they also wanted to give department staff the flexibility to determine tag limits for Chinook and Coho in the recreational fishery that is appropriate within these 20% impact rate caps, right? So moving on to the next area, Grays Harbor. So for Grays Harbor, some of our management objectives for natural origin fall Chinook, Chehalis River stock, we've got a Grays Harbor salmon management policy that gives us some guidance as to how to manage these salmon stocks. One of the criteria in there is if a stock has not met escapement 3 out of 5 years, then we will have a harvest control rule. That takes place for the Chehalis River natural origin fall Chinook stock. We have not made escapement 3 out of 5 years, so WDFW managed fisheries will have a no more than a total terminal impact of 5% on that stock. Okay. For Hump Tulips River Fall Chinook, we have met that goal 3 out of 5 years, so our management objective for the year is to meet the natural origin escapement goal of 3,573. For natural origin Coho in the Chehalis River system, we have, once again, met escapement consistently 3 out of the last 5 years, so our management objective for this year is to meet the natural origin escapement goal of 28,506 fish. Hump Tulips natural origin Coho have not made their escapement goal 3 out of the last 5 years, so once again, we have this 5% impact rate cap in the terminal area for Hump Tulips River natural origin Coho. For chum, chum are managed in the aggregate as just Grays Harbor chum. They have met their natural origin escapement goal 3 out of the last 5 years. So our management objective for this year is to meet the escapement goal of 21,000. There's also some specific, because of the mixed stock nature of chum and coho, we also have some limitations in place to chum harvest in relation to how many available coho they are. So we've got some language about that there could be no chum retention unless coho exceeds its natural origin spawner objective. So moving on to the North Coast, the objectives for North Coast, Quileute River and meet wild escapement goals. So for the sockeye, Lake Pleasant sockeye, there's not an established escapement goal. Summer coho, also no established escapement goal in the Quileute River system. For spring and summer Chinook, the escapement goal is 1,200 fish. For fall Chinook in the Quileute River system, it's we have to, the harvest control rule would be 40%. We can't take more than 40% of the terminal run until you get down to a floor of 3,000 fish. So if you reach this 3,000 fish before you reach the 40%, you don't get 40%. This is a hard cap on the bottom end, okay? For fall coho, it is an escapement range of 6,300 fish to 15,800 fish in the Kluyt system. For the Ho River system, spring, summer, Chinook, similar paradigm to the Kluyt River, where we will preserve 69% of the terminal run, and the floor for that stock is at 900 fish. So if we hit the floor before we hit the 31%, or what's left over, we won't get the full amount. This is a hard cap. Same thing with fall Chinook in the Ho River system, and coho have an escapement goal range of 2,000 to 5,000 fish. Okay, now we'll get into what the actual proposed regulations are for each of those areas. I'm sorry, Joe, we're not doing questions.
No, we're missing something on there.
So. Yeah. Willapa Bay, so for all freshwater areas open to salmon fishing, we have one bag limit for all the freshwater areas within Willapa Bay. It is a two-fish adult bag limit, release wild Chinook. For Grays Harbor, a variety of different, I'm probably not going to read each one of these, but I'll go through it a little bit. Tulips River, September 1 to September 30, two adult bag, release wild Chinook. We drop down to a one-fish bag from the October to November timeframe. And then the December months, it is release all Chinook, not just wilds. So the Chehalis River system, from in the lower river from August 1 through September 15th, release all adult salmon. So that's kind of our typical jack fishery there in the lower river. After September 16th through December 31st, you can have a two adult bag, release all Chinook. And upper river from October 1st through December 31st, two adult bag, release all Chinook. So similar there. Hoquiam, Wishkong, Wenutsee, Satsup, Johns, Elk, Van Winkle all have season lengths of October 1st through December 31st, two adult bag, release all Chinook. Skookumchuck and Newaukum, October 16th through December 31st, two adult bag, release all Chinook. For the Quinault River, July 1 through September 30, release all adult salmon. So that's a jack fishery, right? And then after that time frame, from October 1st to November 30th, we have a two adult bag, release sockeye, release chum in the Quinault River system. In the Queets River system, in the Clearwater River, from September 1 through November 30th, is one fish bag, one adult bag. Queets and Salmon River, September 1 through November 30, is a two adult bag, only one Chinook. Release wild coho. Copalis, Moclips, Joe Creek, September 1 through December 31st, a two adult bag, release Chinook. On the north coast, Quileute and Solduck rivers, most of these systems are have the kind of historic season to them. February 1 through August 31, daily limit of 6, up to 2 adults, release all sockeye, wild coho, and wild Chinook. Then from September 1 through November 30, daily limit 6, 3 adults, only one may be wild, release all sockeye, release wild coho, just through September 15th. A special note here for the Quileute system, the recreational fishery will be closed during treaty fishery days in September and October to reduce gear conflict, especially during those low water periods. All Mondays and Tuesdays in September, and all Mondays and the first and last Tuesday in October, we will be closed for gear conflict.
And while
they prosecute their fishery. So, Bogashiel, Klawa, and Dickey rivers, July 1 through August 31st, daily limit 6, 2 adults, release sockeye, wild coho, wild Chinook. September 1 through November 30, daily limit 3 with only one adult. In the Ho River, June 1 through the 30th, daily limit 1 hatchery Chinook. September 16th through the November 30th, daily limit 6, 2 adults, only 1 adult may be a Chinook. All right, so we talked a little bit about what the management objectives were, what the season structures are. Now I'm going to go back to those management objectives, and we knew what the objectives were. Now how did we hit them? So in the earlier slide, we talked about for Willapa Bay, our guidance was to actively manage to not exceed a 20% harvest rate on natural origin fall Chinook in the Willapa and Nacelle River watersheds. For Willapa, our estimate of what the fisheries would land on in terms of impacts would be a 15.4% of the Willapa system and 19.1% in the Nacelle system. For Coho, our management objective was to reach the spawner escapement goal, natural origin spawner escapement goal of 13,600. Modeling of our fishery would estimate that we'd have about 40, just shy of 41,000 natural origin coho on the spawning grounds. And for Chum, we had a impact rate cap of 10%. Modeling of our fishery would estimate a 9.9% impact on those fish. For Grays Harbor, natural origin Chinook in the Chehalis system. Remember, we had not met escapement consistently, so we had a 5% harvest rate. Our estimate of these fisheries for this year would land us at a 4.5% harvest rate on that stock. For Hump Tulips River, it was just the escapement goal, and we're expecting an escapement of 33,406 in the Hump Tulip system. For natural origin coho in the Chehalis system, once again, it was coho in the Chehalis just to meet escapement. We're expecting an escapement of 38,189, given our modeling. And for Hump Tulips River coho, that was one that had not been meeting it 3 out of 5 years. We had an objective of a 5% harvest rate. Our estimate of the harvest rate in prosecuting these fisheries in this year would land at 4.4%. In terms of Chum, we just needed to make that 21,000 spawner escapement goal, and we're estimating 33,367 Chum on the spawning grounds. Also, one thing we wanted to touch on that we talked about for Hump Tulips within this year was Hump Tulip steelhead. There was during rule simplification, there was some language that got put into the Hump Tulips River, specifically around bait and selective gear rules. We had a public meeting about that. We've had considerable public input and discussion with the commission and with the public on this topic. So we are going to be reverting that rule back to what it was prior to rule simplification, and that will take place through this rulemaking process. So moving forward, the Hump Tulips rule will go back to what it was. For the Quileute system, Lake Pleasant sockeye, unknown, maximized escapement through required release. Once again, that was when we don't have a defined escapement goal for that stock, so we're just trying to maximize escapement as much as possible. Same thing with summer coho. For spring, summer Chinook in the Quileute system, the goal was 1,200. We're down to 1,040, but we have that floor there, so we're staying within our limits there. Same thing for fall Chinook in the Quileute system and fall coho. We're within the range, and the return, we're only utilizing 40% of the return there in impacts. For the Ho River, spring, summer Chinook, we're estimating an escapement of 942. The floor was 900. Fall Chinook in the Ho system, floor is 1,200 fish. We're estimating an escapement of 1,565. And for coho, we had a range of escapement from 2,000 to 5,000. We're estimating a spawner escapement of 3,246. So back to the APA and why this is important. I talked earlier about the four components of the APA. And we are right here in the fourth component. First was the filing of the 101. Then we filed the 102. Then we go through this 35-day comment period, which finalizes with the public hearing. This is where we're at today. So there's two ways this can go, okay? So after we take in all the public comment, evaluate it, go through it, if we decide that there's nothing in there that causes us to change what we're thinking from our proposed regulations to our final regulations in a substantial way, we would move forward with a CR 103 and concise explanatory statement. Once we file that document, 14 later, so it will be published to the Washington State Register, and then 31 days after it's published to the Washington State Register, it becomes effective in Washington Administrative Code. The other way this can go is that we do hear something here that causes us to rethink our strategies. It is a substantial change. So what we would have to do at that point in time is file what's called a 102P or a supplemental. And what that does is it just takes us back to this step again here in the process. So if we basically, it ends up throwing out the initial 102, We don't want to use that proposal. We've heard something that causes us to rethink this. We need to file a new 102, and that kicks in a new comment period. We would have another public hearing and start this process all the way over again from this step. Okay? So, with that being said, now is the time for public comment. The time limit will be 3 minutes. We'll go through those in the order you signed up. So the first person to sign up for testimony is Ross Barkhurst.
Good morning, Ross Barkhurst, South Bend, Washington, member of the advisory group. I have some comments on fresh water for Willapa Bay. I had some discussion I wanted to have in our advisory group, asked for it to be on the agenda in North of Falcon, and it wasn't put on the agenda. So here we are, as is too frequently the case, trying to get you to change a rule that's already put on the pamphlet and online. It's a credibility problem with the public, believe me. The first is, I think, that we need to eliminate the suspended from a float-only rule in the Nazelle. I don't think it's justified. I don't think it allows sport fishermen to fish. It turns them into robots, throw your one thing out there. There are runs where floats are best. There are runs where spinners are best. There are runs where bouncing on the bottom with a corky is best, and you really shouldn't take that away. I'm also curious if you did a small business impact statement when you didn't allow all these things that people buy from small businesses except for a cork and a single hook. In the NEMA, we need to extend the senior season up below the hatchery. Right now it ends September 15th. Last year there were 3 days of fishing as a result of that. If you look at when it rains and when it doesn't, the chances are really slim. Senior citizens, many of them are from out of the area. Most of them can get up and down the bank by themselves, but many of them really shouldn't be driving, and they have to find somebody to drive their car at least one way. And some of them legally can't drive, even though they're in pretty good shape. So they get 3 days fishing if they find out when the rain brought some fish up. You've lowered the limit from 4 to 2. If you extend it to the 18th instead of the 15th, it'll still only be one weekend that they get. And I think that they can have a little more opportunity. And with the two fish limit, won't make any difference. I also think in the NEMA River, where there are no coho during the regular season, there's no reason for barbless hooks. Chinook just don't swallow the lure. I've caught enough of them to know that. Coho may be different, but we don't have coho until November 1st. Don't need to worry about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ross. Next, we got Joe Superfisky.
How are you guys today?
Good. How are you, Joe?
All right. Joe Superfisky. I came down to... I've been involved in the North Falcon process for, since 2003 or 2004 or something, a long time. Anyways, some of the rules, we've got a lot of rules changed in the past that in the past didn't make any sense. We've got them changed, and it's been a long process, and I understand the reason of the process, but also there's some of these rules, it needs to be a little more fluid, because with the stroke of a pen, it can go from open to close, or A to B, which negatively impacts the sportsman and then the economics of the area. And the thing is, the rule that drives me crazy, because we're fishing on predominantly probably 98% hatchery fish, and we've been asking about this for years in and years out, is since the September fishery on the hump tubes for Chinook salmon, September 1st to September 30th, which pretty much is the only game in town at that time. with all the other closures from Puget Sound and everything, and in the past few years, we've seen crowding like no other. I mean, it's nuts. It's like they were giving free TVs away at Walmart or something. You know, the amount of people that show up for that Chinook fishery because it's the only game in town is crazy. So with that being said, me and Jim and some other people have been asking for, let's get a barbed, we can use barbs with our bait just for that 30 days. Because the impact on any wild fish or whatever is pretty much zero to none. And the reason we want that is because with barbed hooks, it would get people off the water quicker, circulating through. They have a better chance of landing fish. And guys like me and Jim and stuff who are fishing guides, the people that fish with us, well, they hire a fishing guide because, number one, they're not knowledgeable or don't have the best abilities or whatever. They go with the guide. So if you think of all the people that don't go with a guide that lack the ability or gear or whatever, you're talking about a lot of fish that are being hooked and lost. And the thing is, we can lower the impacts on everything in general if we have barbed hooks, because the fish stays on, guys get their fish, go home. Otherwise, you're having the impacts you're creating, the encounters as you call them, you have many, many, many more encounters with fish when you have a barbless hook, because you know you're losing a lot of them. I mean, it's just that people don't have the strength to set the hook, or they don't let the fish take it enough. I mean, when a shrimp bites a barber, when it twitches, you gotta wait. You gotta let that thing go down, and you gotta get them. And that's the only way you get them. But if you had barbed hooks, we'd have to be landing a lot more of these fish. I know it's a timer, so I'll get off your mic. Anyways, I think that if we just did the September 1st to 30th, we could fish with barbs for that period of time in that river. It would make a huge difference in traffic, length of time, and encounters on other fish. And I think you would see it. I think if there was somebody monitoring it, or somebody like I did that study with the Lake Coho 2 years ago that nobody used, you know, on fit what we were catching. If somebody monitored that and did an accurate study on that, I think you would see that you would have the rotation of people. There would be less time on the water and less encounters because they would land more fish and then have to leave, you know, get to the limit and get out of there. That's what I want.
Thank you, Jim.
Yep.
And next is Marlisa.
Well, only three of us testifying here.
I'll give everybody another opportunity to change their mind.
My name is Marlisa Williams Dugan. I am a freshwater recreational fishing advocate. I am here to address freshwater issues that affect the Willapa Bay tributaries. There are several things that I would like to talk about today that are indirectly affecting our ability to have a meaningful fishery there. And probably one of the most important things is we need to talk about working with landowners to enhance and improve and develop some deep water holding areas, maybe putting wood back in the river to assist Chinook survival in fresh water. This is something that's important. I myself belong to the Pacific County Conservation District as a citizen and vote on things that are promoted there. I think that working together with Fish and Wildlife to put in important structures in the river is going to be paramount moving into the future. Also, I'd like to talk about the hatchery's need to provide innovative new techniques for freshwater fishermen and for survival of the freshwater broodstock. I'd like to see aerators, UV light treatment centers. I'd like to think about maybe removing excess male Chinook populations when we have these high density holding areas late in the season, causing disease and death. Formalin drips in adult hatchery ponds, which I know was tried in Forks Creek this year. Willapa And last of all, and these are additional things. I would like to see the department advocate as robustly for recreational fishing as they do for commercial fishing. I find that this is a lost opportunity and is a lot of why there is so little confidence within the department. Willapa Bay should be the foremost recreational marine and freshwater fishing that we see in the state. We don't have any competition with tribal interests there, and I challenge the department to advocate for recreational fisheries to have this opportunity. I'd like to see an extreme priority on Chinook. I'd like to see an expanded opportunity on Chinook, whatever that means, an increased bag limit for a week when everything's in there, when there's little targeting on other species that are a problem. I'd like to have you advocate in this way to show your fee-paying public that you do advocate for us in season management with bag limits. And certainly no late closures or bag limit reductions, because commercial gillnets have overfished impacts or hatchery brood stock ahead of our fishery opportunities.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gunther, would you like to change your mind?
No, I'd like another shot.
Jim?
I'm going to pass him.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
I am Jim Babcock. I'm here representing Harbor Guides and Anglers, approximately 80 members. First, I'd like to say thank you to the department for reversing the selective gear rule, putting it back on the Upper Hump Tulips River. And second, I am also, as Joe said, I'm here to push for barbed hooks on the hump tulips in the months of September. As it shows in the regulations, or the proposed regulations, we can keep two Chinook in the month of September. But after that, only one fish, one adult. There's a reason the department also sees that, like we do in the field, it is nearly 100% hatchery Chinook in the month of September. So what I'm proposing is that August 16th, night closure, that's fine. But I think that barbs should remain in effect through the end of September. And then the month of October 1st through November 30th is barbless. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like about 25 cents for me.
Jacob?
I'm good right now.
You're good? Okay. Matt?
Yeah, I'm good. They covered it.
Okay, well, I've got nobody else that wants to provide any testimony, so.
I'd like to add one thing to
okay.
The we
can't be at a public hearing, not a, this is an advisory group meeting, so it's dealt with a little bit different.
Right. So I can't say anything?
No, you can't add on to her comment. Or refute, or back up. It can't go either way.
I'm just going to be like a lone wolf then, man. I'm just going to say that we got four nice rivers dumping into Willapa Bay, which is a huge ecosystem.